Show, the official podcast of thefilmstage.com. I'm your host, Brian J. Rowan. I'm a writer for The Film Stage. And joining me, as always, our associate editor of The Film Stage, Nick Newman.
Howdy.
And another writer for The Film Stage, Danny King.
Hey.
Gentlemen, how are you doing this weekend?
Solid.
Yeah, it's going along.
Excellent. All right, well, for anyone new to The Film Stage Show...
That was good. That was a good way to get situated in.
I'm glad. To anyone new to The Film Stage Show, this is how we work. We'll spend a brief moment at the beginning of this podcast on a general discussion topic related to current movie news or affairs, and then we will jump into a featured review. This week, we will be discussing Tim Burton's newest Johnny Depp love letter, Dark Shadows, based on the 1960s and 70s TV series. But before we get into that, I just want to say that we do really like to get feedback from our fans or our detractors. So if you have anything you'd like to say to us, you can always get in touch with us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. Do not hold back. So to kick us off this week on our general discussion topic, there was a big stir when it was announced that there would be two new anti-piracy warnings at the beginning of DVDs and Blu-rays that would be completely unskippable, which a lot of people rightly pointed out seems odd considering that if you've bought a DVD or Blu-ray, the odds of you pirating said DVD or Blu-ray drop to just about zero. The IPRCcenter.gov is where these are coming from. The National Institute for Property Rights Coordination Center. A lot of people have rightly pointed out that making these unskippable is a little weird. The people who are placing these ads at the beginning of these movies say that they're not trying to scare off current pirators, but rather deter future pirators by apparently making it harder to get to your movie when you just want to watch it. Don't understand. Obviously, you can tell where I stand on this issue. Danny and Nick, why don't we start by just trying to understand, do you think that this is going to be effective at all in deterring people from pirating? If you're the type of person who buys a movie, are your odds for pirating already pretty low?
Oh, well, allow me 1 second to pause my copy of Safe, which I got two nights ago. No. Will it deter pirates? Of course not. I mean, it's like you said, if somebody's buying a Blu-ray, why are they going to need this message shoved down their throat? Don't you think they're good, loyal, noble, ethics-filled customers if they're spending $30 on a movie? It's just, maybe there's a place for these ads. This is not it. You're aiming in the completely wrong direction. It's like, you know, it's like the Iraq War, but it's actually worse because it inconveniences me.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, I think these are basically going to be worthless, but as we were talking about before, there is a hawk on these messages that is frightening.
Yeah,
and if I don't feel like reading a message, I'm still gonna have to stare at that hawk, and it is going to leave a mark. I think
it has violence in its eyes.
This hawk, for anyone who hasn't seen it, this hawk is just violently and comically aggressive. It's from the National Intellectual Property Rights Coordination Center. It is in an emblem that is like golden fire, and it's clutching in its massive talons a banner that reads, "Protection is our trademark," and then it says that piracy is not a victimless crime. To me, these make about as much sense as those laughable, kind of Tony Scott-directed looking, like, you wouldn't steal a purse, you wouldn't steal a car, you wouldn't do all this other stuff, you know, buying pirated movies is stealing.
Mm-hmm. It says you wouldn't download bread. I would download so much bread.
Yeah, I feel like I would download bread in a heartbeat.
I mean, come on.
You can never have enough bread. I mean, it's just... I know as we move towards the digital distribution and everything, piracy is becoming a greater concern. I just don't know that this is the right way to go about creating a solution for that. A lot of places that I've read, particularly one Slate article I remember, said that piracy isn't about people who just like to steal things. There's no real criminal motivation in piracy. It's usually a question of convenience. There was the now infamous comic from The Oatmeal that talked about the struggle to find Game of Thrones, the first season, and how that would inevitably lead to pirating because HBO was refusing to put it out on DVD early, it wasn't selling it on iTunes, and the only way to get it was apparently to just have an HBO subscription and look at HBO Go or see it when it came out. I mean, as entitled as that kind of sounds, I really do feel like as we move towards the digital distribution and consumption spectrum, it really is just a difficulty problem. Does anyone else get that feeling?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like most of the downloading of films that is... most of the film downloads that are circulating around are based on entitlement and not having patience. I mean, you know, I wanted to see House of Pleasures when it was playing, but I didn't have the chance because it wasn't around me, so I just waited for the DVD to come out and I got it from Netflix. I was patient. You know, I didn't feel like I need it now. I didn't feel like I deserve to have it now. I just had to wait. And that's the problem, is that it's like the Game of Thrones thing. You know, if you just kind of sit on your hands for a little bit, it'll come to you eventually. But people don't have the patience for that anymore. It's all about, I got to have it now, and it's got to be in HD, and, you know, it's fucking people.
And is that even something that should be combated, do you think? I mean, have we just moved to that point where everything has to be now, and it's just never going to be feasible for us to expect that the society will wait the 4 months between theatrical release and DVD release?
No, I don't think there's any reason to expect people will wait. They've never shown... there's never been any indication that they're willing to wait. It's all about, again, you gotta have it now, you know?
So given that, do you think it's kind of weird that theater chains and different production companies are still kind of holding back on closing that window? The window between theatrical release and DVD release? Like, wouldn't that be the best way to kind of squelch this pirating culture that's come up? This is just me shooting off at the mouth. I've always kind of believed this. Like, if you gave it... because especially nowadays when movies come out so fast, you know, it used to be you'd get two or three big summer movies. But now it's like every week is the next $200 million special effects extravaganza. So how long do you really need to have, like, a theatrical... what is the word I'm looking for? Exclusivity. How long do you need theatrical exclusivity before it just becomes a matter of people saying, well, it's not in theaters anymore, and I want to see it, so I'm just going to pirate it. And then they have that copy, and they don't see a need to get a Blu-ray or a DVD.
Does Danny want to go? I feel like I've said a lot.
I'm trying to think, like, if I have anything to say, really. Like,
well, do you think that, in terms of just piracy and all that, like, do you think that closing that window would help at all? Because there has been talk of that, but unfortunately, it's one of those things where... like lean on them. There was a... we're going to talk about Tim Burton today. I remember they wanted to shorten Alice in Wonderland's window between release and DVD, and theatrical chains kicked up a stink about that.
I mean, I think it would maybe lower the number, but there's still... I mean, movies are being pirated that are not in theaters anyway, so cutting out, you know, the movies that are currently playing from being able to be pirated would still leave a lot of others.
And I guess the other question is, this is kind of how HD DVDs and Blu-rays shook out. You have a lot of different ways of getting a digital copy of a movie. Obviously, DVDs are the most ubiquitous. You know, you can play them on anything. But now we have, like, iTunes, and then there's Ultraviolet. And it's just becoming such a weird hassle to know what can play on what. Should they really work harder towards creating a universal system of streaming and downloadable content to kind of offset the fact that you can download, you know, someone's torrented copy of The Raid and be able to play it on anything because it's just a universal file? Like, would that help at all?
I don't know. I'm not sure what difference that would make.
I guess it would just be, if we really are doing it for convenience and ease, if that's what's motivating most pirates, which is a lot what a lot of them say, if you don't have to log in and create a account and then, you know, have to sync up all your players, if you could just have that file and play it on anything without having to jump through those hoops, do you think that that, like, is... are we just at a point where we need to realize that what's driving people is just convenience and a desire for something to be simple? And that no matter what you do, so long as you make it complex enough, people will still break the law because it's just worth it to them not to have to deal with that?
Possibly, but are they going to get things quicker, and is it going to be in high quality? Because I think that's the big issue here.
Yeah, because from my personal experience, I bought the Blu-ray of Shame the day it came out. And I was excited because it was Blu-ray, it was DVD, and there was a digital copy. So it was literally every way I could ever watch this movie, outside of getting a 35mm print to play in a theater again, was in one package. And so I eagerly bought it. And then I went home, and I tried to put the digital copy on my Mac and my iPhone, only to discover that Apple has a policy against NC-17 films being able to be played on any of their iTunes products.
Wow.
And so here I was, I had just gone out and bought this film that I saw two or three times in the theaters. I am the type of person who you really want to have on your side when you expect to make money off of me, because I'll give it to you. If you make a product, I'll give you all my money. Just take it, but give me what I want. And here
I was.
But when they
do, the hammer comes down.
But that's the thing. Like, if I'm sitting there and I'm like, well, I bought this digital copy, and now I can't watch it on my iPhone, the next step, the only step I have after that, if I want to be able to say, like, well, I just want to have this on hand in case. Not that I ever watch movies on my iPhone, but the thought hit me. I was like, well, I guess I could just pirate it. Which is ridiculous, because I just bought it. I shouldn't have to go through that thought of, this isn't going to work for me because of technology. How do I get around that? Like, there's got to be a reason why we can't make this whole system less complex. And maybe this is a personal gripe spilling over into a now public discussion because of these unskippable, intrusive moments that we're going to have to watch Terry the Murder Falcon staring us down. But it really does make you think, like, what is the industry doing that's proactive outside of just trying to threaten us or make things more difficult? If anyone out in the world knows, I would love to hear from you. Again, podcast at thefilmstage.com. The problem with a thing like this is that really we all have to deal with it, and we become so inured to it that, you know, beyond just griping about it, unfortunately, especially when the government gets involved as it is now, it just seems like one of those hopeless things where we're just going to have to keep dealing with it. Like all the crazy DRM restrictions and not being able to play video games offline because you need to be logged in.
Yeah, it's especially irritating for someone like myself who doesn't pirate movies, because I don't think it's an ethical practice.
Yeah, and it's not. And because I'm one of those people who values movies as an art form, I want to support the movies that I like to encourage future creation in that same vein. It's kind of like if you walked into a clothing store and as you bought the clothing, you know, the cashier just pulls a gun on you and tells you, you know, if you shoplift anything, we're going to find you. It's like, I'm giving you my money right now. Why are you threatening me now? Why couldn't you have just said that when I walked in? I don't, like, there's no... To me, anyway, there's no clear need for this. There's no clear information that this is even going to be worth doing. And all it does is create just another very exemplary way that this industry that we all unfortunately have to suffer under for the art that we love just does not connect with the general population whatsoever. Any new thoughts on this? What I think is an asinine ploy to try to squelch piracy.
I mean, I just basically agree with you.
It's unfortunate how often we agree. We really need to start just fabricating some mischief on this show.
I mean, I don't know how many different readings there will be of these messages. You know, I think most people will just look at them and laugh, and then once the 10 seconds are over, they'll just forget about them.
Yeah.
No, I'm going to be thinking about it throughout the entire movie.
It's going to ruin everything.
I'm just going to sit there seething.
You were not going to be able to take out your cell phone because you might accidentally record 5 minutes.
I'm not going to take out my cell phone because I'm afraid Terry the Hawk's going to swoop in and...
Terry the Murder Hawk.
And then rip out my throat.
All right. Well, I mean, I guess that's all we can say on this. I just thought it was worth bringing up because, again, this is a constant refrain from the industry about how much money they're losing. And, Nick, I know that you... We're lucky enough not to be able to see Dark Shadows this weekend.
Yeah, I mean, so I would have preferred to not have a million things going on this week and be able to just sit down and enjoy Johnny Depp and Tim Burton's latest artistic collaboration, but alas.
Alas, I know, sometimes life is unfair, but we can expect you back next week for our equally thrilling discussion of Battleship, correct?
Oh, we're reviewing Battleship?
I didn't know that. Oh, man.
Oh, I don't know. Yeah, I'll be around for Battleship. It'll be fun.
All right, well, we look forward to that. Before you leave, why don't you tell us and the people listening at home one more time where we can find all of your stuff on the internet?
You can find me on thefilmstage.com. All of my writings are published there. And I'm also on Twitter, twitter.com/Nick_Newman.
All right, excellent. Well, thank you for popping in for our brief discussion on Piracy Rules. We look forward to hearing from you again. So now that we've said goodbye to Nick, Danny and I have remained so that we can give you listening at home our opinions on the newest Tim Burton Johnny Depp collaboration, Dark Shadows, out in theaters this past weekend.
My name is Barnabas Collins. 2 centuries ago, I made Collinwood my home.
My love.
Until a jealous witch cursed me, condemning me to the shadows.
What have you done?
For all time.
What the hell is this?
He's coming. He's coming.
Hear me, future dweller. What is the year?
1972.
So, Dark Shadows is the tale of Barnabas Collins, played by Johnny Depp, who is turned into a vampire by a witch, which is not something I was aware that witches were able to do. He is then locked in a box for 200 years and then awakens in 1972 to help kind of put together the last vestiges of his family. Help them overcome a curse that has been afflicting them for as long as can be remembered. I mean, I'm not a huge Tim Burton fan. Danny, I don't know what your opinions are.
I think maybe Sweeney Todd is my favorite, or Ed Wood.
I would say Sweeney Todd had its moments, and I think that it helped that it was not written by them. They were working off pretty strong source material.
They're just very hollow and dull in every other respect than the visuals. And this one is kind of the same, with the one exception of that I actually laughed quite a bit, maybe in the middle 30 minutes.
Which is not saying a lot for a nearly 2-hour long film.
Right. There's a lot of bad. But when Depp shows up in this town and he starts kind of talking with them in his long prose and they just give him these blank stares, I kind of found some humor in it. But then the last, it's probably like 45 minutes, just everything I didn't want to happen happened. And it just turned into an assault, basically, on my senses.
Yeah, the way that I would describe this movie is it's so much plot. There is so many things that happen, and yet there's no story connecting any of them.
Yeah, one of the things that was really funny to me is that like the last half hour is just this like stupid fight sequence and it goes on forever. And then there are other flashbacks detailing like really crucial moments that he will spend like 2 or 3 shots on. So it's just funny to me that, you know, something really dull and kind of uninteresting to me got 20 or 30 minutes of screen time. And then these back threads that he weaves in, he gives like 30 seconds to.
Yeah. All right, so the best way to describe my biggest problem with this movie actually ties into this. We begin the film with a bafflingly long prologue that fills you in on the history of Depp's character, who is like a fishing town magnate who is turned into a vampire because he scorns the affections of a chambermaid who happens to be like a vampire, not a vampire, a witch. And then, like I said, locked in a box and everything. So for 15 minutes, we're hearing a voiceover from Johnny Depp detailing everything. We then switch perspective to a troubled young woman who is like the perfect Burton heroine. You know, she looks like she's on heroin. She has these huge, huge eyes, and she always looks like she's in a state of mild shock, but she's very good-humored about it. And she introduces us to the new Collins family as it resides now. And then when Barnabas is broken out of his coffin by a crew building a McDonald's, he immediately becomes the new protagonist again. So that discordance between who we're really supposed to be focusing on, it doesn't let you into the film. And the film does very little to try to help you out in that respect. Like you said, there are flashbacks that contain the elements of a very haunting and startling story, and yet you get like 2 of them.
Yeah, like there's
nothing.
Just to add to that confusion of characters, when they introduce the family, they make this big kind of deal about how the kid has these visions, and then Helena Bonham Carter is a psychiatrist, and there's literally no interaction between them at all.
Yeah.
Like, there's no indication that there's any kind of point to her being there.
Yeah, you expect that the movie's going to pay off on a lot of things.
Right.
And it never does.
Just kind of shows up every other scene, like reminds you that he kind of has these problems, but...
Not even that, but just to remind you that he's still there.
Yeah.
Like, there's... The family is... It's a fractured family. The kid we're talking about, the young boy, Daniel, his mother died and was lost at sea, they say. And he claims that he can still see her. The new governess who shows up, whose name is Victoria, though she asks everyone to call her Vicky, even though neither of those is her real name, she is seeing visions of a woman who, you know, is died earlier in the film. And all these different characters have these plot lines, and they're just completely abandoned. You know, they set them up and never pay them off. They, however, all get a conclusion. This town of Collinsport, like, their main export is Deus Ex Machina. There's just, like, there's... And that's one of the most baffling things about this film, is you can't even critique it on a storytelling level, because for my money, there is no story.
Yeah, it's basically just an excuse to create this fish-out-of-water kind of scenario, but then it really just ends up turning into kind of a fight between a vampire and a witch for no... Like, I'm trying to wonder what his intention was for this movie, because there's like some scenes that are treated very seriously, like the prologue, other scenes that are like very comic, and then the last part's kind of some of both, and then it ends with a serious note, and then the final shot is just ridiculous.
Yeah, I mean, and this is again where the storytelling problem comes in, and I mean, the funny thing is, it seems odd to get into spoilers so quickly, but I feel as though we're going to have to.
Yeah.
Because to talk about the real shortcomings of this film, you really have to set up what the initial setup seems to be, and then how it's concluded, and then how there's nothing in between. So before we do that, I just want to say that I'm usually at least able to, if not appreciate, just see in Tim Burton's films that kind of Tim Burton spark that I know makes some people think that he's an interesting director. You can always tell a Tim Burton film. It's just got a very simple aesthetic to it that's very, like, family-friendly gothic. And this film, I thought, wasn't even close to achieving that. Did you have a feeling about that? Because I've heard a lot of people say that this is a beautiful but stupid film, and I thought it was stupid and completely visually uninteresting, too.
I think there were maybe one or two sets that caught my eye. There's kind of that scene where him and the witch, I can't even remember her name, they have this really extended sex scene, and then right after there's this shot of the entire room just in total disarray. And that was one of the moments in the movie where I was like, wow, that looks really cool. But most everything else was very, it was just, the whole tone of it was just so uninteresting that I couldn't even engage with the visuals.
Yeah, because this town that they create, this Collinsport, that obviously was built by the Collins family, it's so removed from everything else, and it's so barely constructed or fleshed out, that it just seems anemic. Like, this film supposedly takes place in 1972, but aside from, like, one joke about hippies, and all the music that plays throughout the film, like, there's really nothing to set this apart. It just seems like another town that's kind of meandering out there in a temporally ambiguous cinematic landscape.
Yeah.
Like, they could have updated this movie with literally nothing more than making one character listen to an iPod, and I would have completely bought it as a modern film.
Yeah, I agree. And some of the clothing.
Yeah.
A little different, maybe. Like, with the teenage girl.
Yeah. But even then, I mean, like, I don't know. It seems like if you're going to set it in 1972, and if you're going to have this weird gothic overtone, far be it for me to say that Tim Burton should never tone it down, but this was not the film where he should have toned it down, and it feels like he did.
Yeah.
This film is so uninteresting on a story level, it really would have helped if he had just inserted some insanity on a production or costume design level.
Yeah, and I mean, I guess the insanity hits a little bit in the climax, but it's not even visual insanity as much as it is just people flailing around and kind of...
Flailing around and then, like, screaming about plot that you never, ever happened. Like,
so bad.
And with that, I think it's safe now to get into spoilers. We can just knock this thing out. I mean, So for anyone at home, do not go see Dark Shadows. I got nothing out of this film. And it's 2 hours long. 2 hours. Think about that. Think of all that you could accomplish in 2 hours. It's really not worth it to see this film. I have not read a single thing that said that you should either, so I can't even give you a dissenting opinion from mine. I mean, do you think that there's anything to recommend this film aside from that middle 30 minutes?
Yeah, I was just going to say, like, there were some laughs there, but it's not worth it.
Okay, so getting into spoilers now, I mean, here's the biggest thing that's just so endemic of the problem with this movie. There is a female character played by Chloe Grace Moretz, and she is introduced as though she's going to be this agent of chaos in these people's lives because she is a 15-year-old, rebellious, you know, wants to move to New York kind of girl. And aside from one scene where she's kind of coaching Johnny Depp's character of Barnabas to woo a woman, she's completely underplayed the entire time. Like, nothing happens with her that's interesting. And then at the end, in this last 30-minute climax that you were talking about, it turns out she's a werewolf. Something that has never been set up, never been... Like, there's one point where I think the kid makes a... The younger, I guess it's her cousin, Daniel, makes some kind of comment about her, like, you know, making noises like a kitten or something, which is supposed to be a masturbation joke. Which the humor in this movie, I mean, like, just... I don't even know where it's supposed to be or where it's coming from sometimes. But she's a werewolf. Like, the witch gets thrown into her room, and she's a green, hairy-looking, kind of like a cheaper version of Beast from the X-Men. And she comes down to help Barnabas fight the witch. Just saying this out loud makes me hate this movie. And her mother is, like, horrified. And she just looks at her mother and says, like, I'm a werewolf. Like, let's not make a big deal out of it. And I feel like that's the entire movie. Like, hey, I'm this.
And that line, would work if a 30-minute climax of, like, werewolf fighting hadn't preceded it. Because if we're not making a big deal about it, we shouldn't have.
Or if we had seen this girl struggling with it in any way.
Yeah.
Like, oh no, the moon's full. Like, running home. Like, if she had been working through this and just been like, Mom, look, I'm a werewolf. Like, let's not, I'm used to it. But, like, this is the first time we've gotten any kind of inkling about this. And so for her to say that is kind of like a slap in the face of the audience, because you're like, no, let's make a big deal out of this. When the hell did this happen and why?
Yeah.
And then there's another throwaway line by Ava Green's character, the witch, Angelique. And she says, you know, I've been cursing your family, obviously. And she says, I sent the werewolf that bit your daughter in her crib. Wait, what the hell? When did that ever come up? I was furious because I was wondering, why is this only coming up now? Like, there's never a mention of, like, oh, you know, we had a rat problem. And, like, you know, one day we woke up and our baby was in the crib with, like, bite marks on her. Like, how did you get a werewolf? Because this witch can apparently make anything. How did you get a werewolf? How did you get it to go into the crib room? How did you get it to just bite the kid and not eat it? They do a really poor job of setting up the parameters for the powers of their supernatural beings.
Yeah.
Like, Barnabas is only burned by the sun sometimes. Nobody seems to notice that he's a vampire. Yeah, like, I don't know, because I was constantly watching, and there are scenes where he's just, like, in full sun, but he's got a hat on, so... Yeah.
And it's funny, too, because in the climax, I remember there's only, like, one cop outside the house.
Yeah.
And I was just like, what? Like, the whole town is watching, hundreds of people. There's Johnny Depp, there's the witch, there's the rest of the family, and then there's just one cop.
Yeah.
And it was just like, okay, maybe get some backup. like something's going to go down here, and you're not going to be able to stop it.
No, I mean, and that's, yeah, this final scene. So Johnny Depp, apparently everything, again, I'm furious talking about this movie. Like, they set up this thing where Ava Green is going to turn the town against Johnny Depp and make them go and, like, kill him or put him in a box again. And what happens is, like, everyone goes to this house because she makes them all, sure, she lets them all know that he is the reason that a lot of people have been getting murdered recently, which rarely comes up in the film. There's, like, one scene where you see some fish packers and one of them says, oh yeah, we're all nervous because of all those people who died.
Yeah, that's kind of like a big thing that they left unaddressed. Like, the scene where he's sitting with those guys around the bonfire.
Yeah.
like, those are kind of like nice people, and then he just eats them. Like,
yeah, there's no,
it's kind of disturbing.
This movie's complete and utter lack of morality could work if, again, I knew what tone it was supposed to be taking.
Yeah,
like, there's no relationship set up. These characters are like, their character is that one line description of them. Like, the mother trying to hold the family together, the vampire locked in a closet for 200 years. And it's just so aggravating because she finally says, like, okay, this is the guy who's been killing everyone. And the town's like, oh yeah, we forgot about the 24 people that have been murdered in the last 4 days. Let's go and get him. And, like, yeah, there's that one cop. And the way he diffuses the situation is by literally saying, all right, everybody go home.
Not very convincing.
No, not convincing. And, like, I kept expecting him to show up, but apparently he actually did just leave. Because later, when the house is exploding and the family is out on the front lawn, like, no one is there. Like, this is the point when people should be at this house, and no one is there. And Michelle Pfeiffer has this line, which, again, infuriated me. She's like, you know, the little boy's like, what are we going to do now? And she says, what we always do, we're going to endure.
Ugh.
It's like, you don't endure. When the vampire came back, you were stagnating. You were like a terminally ill person laying on a bed just waiting. Like, it's not endurance. That's
And we should also mention Helena Bonham Carter's character, who is this alcoholic psychiatrist.
Right.
Who ends up trying to steal Johnny Depp's blood to become immortal.
Yes.
And it was strange to me.
It was strange to me as well.
The image of her inserting the vampire's blood into her own body was unsettling.
Yeah, because she's a psychologist. Like, she's not... She shouldn't... Why does she have a blood transfusion / dialysis machine?
That wasn't a psychiatrist's office. That was a lair for a murderer.
And again, these are questions that I suppose I could let go if this movie had any grasp of tone, but it doesn't. Like, I guess the best way to put this is, if someone asked me what this film is about, I'd say it's about a vampire trying to bring honor back to his family. And then if you ask me how they did that, it's like, well, he has a room full of gold. Like, that's it. Like, oh, well, all of our problems rely on the fact that we don't have enough money to deal with our problems. Like, he doesn't give them any moral guidance. He doesn't do anything for them. He sends one kid's father away.
Yeah.
Johnny Lee Miller gets this.
Yeah.
And this is another thing that kind of points out what's wrong with this film. Because I don't know how you felt about this, but for a while I just thought Johnny Lee Miller as the father character was just kind of a loser.
Yeah, then he turns into this freakish kind of womanizer, thief, something, yeah.
Yeah, it's literally like this movie will introduce a plot point and then resolve it 5 minutes later.
Yeah.
It's like, okay, Johnny Lee Miller, he's not doing anything. Okay, now he's making out with the coat check girl and stealing pocket watches. And now he's opting to leave his son and go live this life as a, you know, coat check girl snogging pocket watch thief. Like,
and that whole exchange gets like 10 seconds. Like, you get one look from the kid tearing up and Johnny Lee Miller's reaction, then he just leaves.
Yeah, and it's like, yeah, that makes him a shitty person, but I don't know why he's that way.
Yeah.
And honestly, there's so many points in this movie like that, and I kept wondering to myself, something that I rarely do, what was the cast, what were all of these talented people thinking when they made this movie? What did they see in this that was worth blocking out, you know, months of their schedule to go do this for?
Yeah, it just seems like a lot of wasted effort and talent.
Yeah, I mean, oh my god. It's really difficult to describe the issues that this movie has, because there are issues that you shouldn't have to have in a movie. I feel like a normal, solid script should be pretty much right there. I think that should be at the top of the list.
Yeah.
Even if you have a shitty script, you should at least still have a story.
Just double check it and make sure there's kind of consistent motivations, etc.
Yeah, like, does any of this make sense? Nope. Okay, rolling. Like, because if we were to boil this down, I feel like the main thrust of this film are, again, vampire trying to help family and trying to regain the lost love that is being manifest in this new governess at his family's mansion. And I guess also, you know, fighting the witch. There's like that love triangle thing.
Yeah.
But the relationship between these characters is so poorly defined that it becomes impossible to know who to root for or what's going on in general. Like, can you answer me this? Like, do you know what the relationship between Johnny Depp and this Angelique character were before she killed his parents and turned him into a vampire?
There was that thing where, like, she was poor, he was rich.
Yeah, like, I understand that. And then, but the extent to which he may or may not have led her on.
Yeah, because in that opening shot when Barnabas as a kid is looking at her, it's kind of like, oh, these two people are really in love. They're just in different sides of the family.
Right.
Or different types of families. And then a few shots later, he's like, but then I found my real true love. And it's like, wait a minute. What happened with that other one?
Like, what was wrong with her? Not only that, but there's a scene where she's like pushing him against the wall and kissing him. And he doesn't really seem that into it.
Yeah.
And she says, you know, tell me you love me. And he's like, that you would be hearing a lie. And I'm like, okay, so she's nuts. I mean, that's, you know, as far as gender roles in film go, that's kind of regressive, but at least it makes sense in a story aspect.
Mm-hmm.
But then later on, when he sees her again, they have this moment, like you said, this extended sex scene where they're rolling on the walls and everything. And I was like, wait, so did they actually used to have a physical relationship?
Yeah, when they were like 8 or whatever.
Yeah, like, it just didn't make any sense to me. Like, and that's what you really need. You need me to understand what the hell is going on between these characters. Because, like, my level of engagement with this film is probably less than I will have with Terry the Anti-Piracy Murder Falcon. Like, there's very little chance that I'm going to even be able to adequately describe to anyone who wants to know about this film what the hell was going on.
Yeah.
And aside from that one conversation between Johnny Depp and the character's name was Carolyn, played by Chloe Grace Moretz. Yeah. I mean, him asking her how to court a woman, and then he does nothing. Like, there's a montage where they're walking on a beach and suddenly they're in love, and there's never any real conversations between them.
Yeah.
And one scene during this ridiculous Alice Cooper concert.
Oh, God.
Because they have to throw a ball to show that they're back on their game. Again, there's no problem that money can't solve. Like, he goes and he's talking to her on the balcony, and she's like, you know, there's nothing I've had in life that hasn't been taken away from me. And you get this heart-wrenching flashback to this poor little girl being institutionalized because she's talking to a ghost. And you're like, this is where the story is. This is what I should have been looking at. But instead, it's just like, oh, well, I'm here and I'm not going to leave you. And they're like, oh, okay. And then they kiss, and then Ava Green sees it and she gets pissed off. Like,
yeah, I remember that scene was so funny because he says he confesses his love, and then you expect her to confess it back, but she says she's hesitant, and it's like, oh, okay, I wonder why. And then there's, you know, she was in a psychiatric institution isolated for her childhood.
Yeah. Like, shouldn't there be a scene of them working through that?
Is one Johnny Depp line really going to make you forget all of that?
Yeah, it's such a ridiculous film, and not in a good way. Like, I know I'm laughing about it now, but like,
it's not enjoyable.
Yeah, man. No, it's not. It's.
I think there are some of the things, like the scene where he and the girl are talking about dating tips. Like, I think that's mildly amusing.
Yeah.
Maybe the scene also where he's kind of trying to do business with these other like manual labor workers. Like, he's in this pub with his cape and his cane, and he just looks absurd. It's, like, relatively kind of digestible. But the bulk, like, 80 or 90% of it is just not fun.
Yeah, these are moments that could be distilled into a YouTube clip.
Yeah.
And honestly, because the film does such a poor job of grounding them in any sense of story, and there's no context, they would play just as well.
Yeah.
And I mean, that scene where he's talking to those fishermen, he just hypnotizes them to get what he wants.
Yeah, that was the worst part of the scene, too. I wanted him to, like, try to come up with business tactics and just sound silly, but then he just hypnotizes them, and I was like, oh, that's kind of creepy.
Yeah, it diffuses any sense of meaning or interest from the scene.
Yeah.
Because it's like, well, no, he's going to fail. Oh, wait, no, he can hypnotize people. Okay.
No conflict, I guess.
Yeah, this is a movie completely bereft of conflict. And it's also a movie completely predicated on the idea, which might be true, that every woman on Earth wants to have sex with Johnny Depp.
Yeah.
Which, again, comes to nothing and goes nowhere.
Yeah, I mean, I like Depp. I think he's, you know, he's good in this. He's just not the most interesting part.
Yeah, I mean, I don't know. I get this sense that, like, he enjoyed himself in this, but unfortunately the character is so removed from anything, and aside from, like you said, those few fish out of water moments, it's barely a character at all.
Yeah, it's really not.
It's like a reoccurring Saturday Night Live sketch.
That's actually a good way to put it.
And as we all know from the Saturday Night Live films, that never makes a good film. That's not emotion picture material.
Yeah.
And this movie is 2 hours. I literally cannot stress that enough. If there's anyone who's listening to this who's like, yeah, this could be a good way to kill some time. 2 hours. And I forgot to put my watch on, and I'm a complete stickler about it. I turn off my phone before every movie I watch. So I was unmoored from any kind of signpost as to when this movie could be finishing. I was dying in this theater. And usually in a movie, you can be like, okay, you know, we've had rising action. This seems to be the beginning of the climax. So that means I've got maybe 15 more minutes.
Yeah.
This movie doesn't have that.
It has an Alice Cooper concert.
Yeah.
For 15 minutes.
The same problem I had with The Raven. This movie seems to be very self-aware of its own limitations in terms of time, so that at some point it seems to say to itself, oh shit, it's almost 2 hours. I need to end now.
Let's wrap it up.
Yeah, and it's like, well, we haven't really done anything. It's like, that's cool. No one will care.
Was The Raven enjoyable on any kind of campy level?
Not really.
No. Okay.
Sadly. I believe it was shorter than this, though, so there's that. The Raven is a movie that's just kind of there. It does have a story, and it does have a plot. It's just that it's not very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Oddly enough, it's kind of got the same problem where you feel like it should have this really gothic tone, but it's so stereotypically like 1800s London that you don't care. And it's even worse because it takes place in Baltimore. And I've lived around Baltimore. We don't get London fog in Baltimore. So that was confusing. So I don't even know. This movie, Dark Shadows, it's so not good.
Yeah.
It's not even bad to the point where it becomes good again. Like, I can't sit here like laughing about the asinine things that people have said. Because even when it's a line like, I'm a werewolf, just let's not talk about it. Or let's not make a big thing out of it. It's just infuriating. Because I want to make a big thing out of it. Yeah, I think my feelings are pretty clear. And I feel like there's just not a lot to say about this. Other than the fact that it has the audacity to try to set up a sequel.
Which I don't think it'll get.
No.
Just based on the fact that I can't imagine this making much money.
I was looking earlier, actually, because I was wondering about that. Because a lot of people have been saying that, you know, whatever you say about Johnny Depp and Tim Burton films, like, you know, no one really likes them that much anymore, I feel, but they still managed to make a lot of money.
Yeah.
Friday estimates for this film put it at $9,720,000, getting this from Box Office Mojo, which is not terrible.
Mm-mm.
Except for the fact that The Avengers, what should have been a very heavily front-loaded film, made $29,124,000 or $29,124,000. Like, that is just an inestimable difference that this movie will never be able to come back from.
Yeah, this movie, and looks like, I heard it's expensive too.
Yeah, you want to know what the production budget was?
Oh, don't
what
scare
would you,
me.
What would you guess the production budget on this was?
I would probably guess maybe like 60, 70.
You are so incredibly wrong.
Ugh.
According to Box Office Mojo, which I think we can all agree is a fairly reputable site for stuff like this, you know, they've usually got their stuff in order.
Mm-hmm.
According to Box Office Mojo, the production budget for Dark Shadows was $150 million.
Oh my god.
I defy you to tell me where that money went in this film.
That's absurd.
It is completely absurd. So this movie is going to be a loss. And I just wonder if this is finally the moment where the studio sits back and says, oh right, just because it's Johnny Depp and Tim Burton doesn't mean that it's going to make money, and maybe they'll actually try to rein him in a little bit.
Yeah, I mean, because Alice in Wonderland, I didn't think was enjoyable at all, but that at least had, you know, you had the fan base for the book.
Yeah.
I don't know what they would look at with this and think it's worth giving $150 million to.
Yeah, this is at most a cult TV
show. Yeah, I mean,
that
I'm sure it has
heard of, but.
Yeah.
Okay. Well, any final thoughts on Dark Shadows before we jump into our picks for the week ahead?
I don't think I will ever rewatch it again.
I will actively go out of my way to not rewatch this film.
It's one of those movies.
In fact, like, I was thinking about it. I didn't really feel like I'd want to go back and see The Avengers. Like, you know, I saw it and it was good, but I was like, I don't need to go back to the movie theater for that. But this is the type of movie where I would come up with a reason not to. Like, with The Avengers, I'd say, oh, okay, let's go. This movie, I'd be like, oh, I just broke my foot. And then to lend credence, I would drop a cinder block on my foot.
Yeah.
Like, because at least that would get me sympathy and people would drive me places, whereas this movie would just waste 2 hours of my life. It's that bad. I don't know. I don't know what the people were thinking about this film.
Yeah.
All right. Well, now that we've completely destroyed that, if anyone, and I'm putting this out there almost like a dare, if anyone has anything good to say about Dark Shadows, and there were people in the theater I was in who laughed at a lot of stuff, so there's bound to be someone out there. If you have anything nice to say about Dark Shadows, if you disagree with us in any way, I entreat you to email us at podcast@thefilmstage.com. Let us know what you think. If you make a cogent and interesting enough point, hey, I might even read it on the air. You can have like 10 seconds of internet fame. But so now, looking forward to the week ahead, we have a number of new releases, all kind of going for different demographics. We've got Battleship by director Peter Berg, the adaptation of the board game, which is, again, a really depressing thing to have to say out loud. We then have What to Expect When You're Expecting, an adaptation of a book that's really not even a narrative, as far as I'm aware. And then we have The Dictator, Sacha Baron Cohen's new film. Hysteria is coming out in limited release. And then in the news of DVDs and everything, we will be having Chronicle, The Devil Inside, The Grey, One for the Money, Albert Nobbs, Rampart. It's actually a fairly big week for DVDs.
Yeah, there's some pretty good on
there. So if you had to pick one of each, a theatrical and a DVD release, what do you think you would go for?
I think I'm kind of interested in seeing Hysteria. I really don't have a lot of interest in Battleship, especially now that I know it's 135 minutes. I saw that trailer and it didn't even look fun. It just looked just so weird and boring. For DVDs though, I definitely go with The Grey.
Yeah, I have to agree on The Grey.
That's one of the best things I've seen this year.
Yeah, The Grey I think might still be my my top of the year.
Yeah, it's up there for me.
It's definitely not something I was expecting.
Yeah, I also liked Rampart a lot.
I have yet to see that, so that may trump The Grey just in terms of not having seen it before.
Yeah.
I do know, however, that come Tuesday, I will have bought a Blu-ray copy of The Grey, which, if it comes with a digital copy, will hopefully be able to be played on my iTunes. So yeah, I definitely agree with The Grey. Chronicle was okay.
Chronicle's okay, yeah. I'd say kind of like Dark Shadows in terms of the climax ruining it a little bit for me.
Yeah, a lot of people were talking about how good the climax of that film was.
I thought it was kind of just a mess.
Yeah, it definitely just kind of goes off the rails.
And but the first hour, some really good stuff, I think.
Yeah, it was really solid, and I liked... I'm not usually a fan of the found footage genre. Which is actually why I'll say this. If anyone out there buys The Devil Inside, I'm going to come to your house and break your DVD player. That was the most cynical and execrable movie I've seen in quite a while.
I did read the ending online.
Yeah, it's, you know, not to spoil it, but it's stupid as hell.
That's what I've heard, yeah.
So don't do that. I would say that I would probably go with Hysteria 2. Just because everything else just doesn't seem that great.
Yeah, I haven't really heard anything about Hysteria. I'm not sure what the word is, but just compared to everything else.
Yeah, I mean, it's for anyone unaware, Hysteria is the invention of the first vibrator in the name of medical science. Because, you know, women used to be diagnosed with something called hysteria that was, I guess it was considered a buildup of like sexual frustration, and that would cause them to go crazy. And so this was supposed to relieve that in a moral and medically upstanding way. So at least even from that, it's something interesting that you haven't seen before. Unlike, you know, military fighting big alien robots and Sacha Baron Cohen doing a pretty offensive...
Yeah.
You know,
did you see him on SNL this weekend?
I did not, no. Was that any...
Or not this week. I guess it was last weekend by now, but he had kind of a funny skit where he was, like, torturing people to write positive reviews of the movie. So he like read a quote from A.O. Scott's review, and it was like, "The Dictator is a great movie." There, I said it. Let me go. So that was kind of amusing.
Yeah. So I mean, The Dictator could be good, though I've heard it's slightly toothless, and I don't know. I'm not even in the mood for it. So I think we can both agree on The Gray, and just because of the fact that we haven't heard overwhelmingly unpositive things about it, Hysteria. And that'll bring us to the end of the Film Stage show for today. I hope you have enjoyed listening to us grapple with the just narrative incompetency of Dark Shadows. Danny, why don't you tell us where we can find more of your work on the internet to tide us over until next week?
I have a personal blog at thekingbulletin.com and on twitter.com/thekingbulletin.
All right. And I, of course, can be found at dearfilm.net, where I write personal reviews on movies and whatnot. And you can find me at Twitter, twitter.com/Brian with an I, J Rowan. So Brian J. Rowan. Yeah, that is all for today. So we will see you next week when we talk about Battleship or possibly The Dictator, which I know you're all looking forward to. When I found out that Dark Shadows was 2 hours long, yeah, I was furious.